Hello, everyone. We will continue in our Bible study through the book of Mark. Okay, now on over to chapter 5 now, at verse 1. And they came over unto the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, a demon, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains, because that he had been of 10 bound with fetters and chains, with shackles, and the chains had been plucked or pulled apart or pulled asunder by him, and the fetters or shackles broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. You know, I've seen situations where a person who is demon possessed has supernatural strength, and they can do things that are way beyond what any normal human being can do. And I know of cases in mental institutions where people not only have mental sickness, but some of them become demon-possessed. And they'll start destroying things, and they'll send people in there to subdue them. And it'll take any number of people to finally subdue them. They're just beyond human strength because they have that supernatural strength from that demon being there inside them. Rip things out of the wall, pick up huge heavy things that normally they could not, throw people around. That's what was happening here. And sometimes a person who's demon-possessed, they'll be so strong because that demon being in there that their bones and muscles won't stand the pressure that's exerted on them, and it'll just pull them apart or break them. Well, this was a sight to behold right here. Here was this wild man living in among the tombs, and it was a fearsome, frightening sight, because he was demon-possessed, and nobody could tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, you Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God that you torment me not." Those were the demons talking. And he said unto him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit. Come out." And he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And, you know, there are different kind of demons. There are sassy demons, and there are violent demons, and there are charming ones. And there are people who are possessed with one demon or two, and sometimes several, many. They just take over the body. Now, that cannot happen to anybody that doesn't let it happen. And therefore, the gate is closed, so to speak. But people who play around with that kind of stuff and ask for it and drift away from God and tinker around with this spooky, mysterious, weird stuff that goes on in the so-called scientific world, which is not scientific, are asking for trouble. Mind readers and fortune tellers and seances and all that kind of thing. So we stay close to God, filled with God's Spirit, which is a spirit of power and love and a sound mind, seeking the kingdom and his righteousness, carrying on, we're protected. But we drift away from God, drop our guard, go into a rage, make ourselves vulnerable by not guarding the door of our mind, so to speak, get involved with the wrong people, the wrong practices. First thing you know, we can end up with terrible problems. And that's what happened to this man. He asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he besought him much that he would not send them away out of the country. He begged him earnestly not to send them away. Now there was there near under the mountains a great herd of swine feeding. And all the devils, the demons, the legion, besought him, begged him, saying, "Send us into the swine that we may enter into them." See, they know that they're not going to be able to die. They're made out of spirit. And they once were wonderful angels. And they rebelled with Lucifer and became horrible, unclean spirits, along with Lucifer, who became Satan. But they're still made out of spirit. But in their perverted, twisted way, they're always trying to get relief, and maybe they'll figure out a way to be destroyed so that they can get into a human being, and that human being gets destroyed. Maybe they'll die with a human being, but it doesn't work. And in this case, well, send us over there into the herd of swine, and when they die, maybe we'll die with them. So they said, send us into the swine that we may enter into them. You imagine animals being demon-possessed, but it can happen. And I think sometimes animals that normally are very, very tame and subdued and passive, that go wild and crazy and end up hurting people and their masters and all that, there might be some of this involved in that. Now, these people shouldn't have been raising pigs in the first place. But they didn't just raise pigs. They had vast herds of pigs. And so when they asked Jesus, didn't command him, ask him, can you send us over there? Then Christ allowed it to happen. Forthwith, Jesus gave them leave, permission. And the unclean spirits went out and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. They were about 2,000 and were choked and drowned in the sea. I was just looking at some of the topography around the Sea of Galilee, at some pictures of it. And there's not that many steep slopes that go down in there, so you can pretty well figure out where this took place. They ran down that steep slope and just right on out into the water and drowned. And they that fed the swine fled and told it in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that was done. And they came to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the demon and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. They were astounded. So the whole village came out to see all of these things that were happening, and when they came out there and they came to where Jesus was, here was this famous wild man completely changed. Had clothes on. He was in his right mind. And he was sitting right there with Jesus Christ. What a difference in the way he looked then and the way he was described in the previous verses that we just read. And what does it say? In his right mind. See, people who are demons possessed are not in their right mind. They're insane. Not that all insane people are demon possessed, but I think more than we might realize are. And instead of being happy and rejoicing, they were frightened. Oh, look at this. Our livelihood is gone, and this man has so much power, he can tame somebody like that. And they that saw it told him how it befell to him that was possessed with the demon, or demons, and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray or plead with him to depart out of their coast. Please leave. We don't know how to handle all this. This is a disruption. This is an interference. Can you go somewhere else? And so they wanted him to go. But what a tremendous blessing that this man now is free of all of that. What a tremendous thing. And only Jesus Christ could do that. He had peace. He had relaxation. He was delivered. Now he could carry on with his life and live life in a healthy, peaceful, wonderful way because Christ got rid of that bunch of demons that had taken his life over. And only Christ could have done that, or those he gave the power to do it and free that man. The man was so heavily taken over by them, and how it got started with him, don't know. It could have been something about the family getting into magic and all that kind of stuff. But once they got in, he had to be delivered, and Christ did that. And when he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the demon, verse 18, prayed him or asked him that he might be with him. Can I come with you? I don't want to be away from you. Howbeit, Jesus suffered him not, but said unto him, go home to your friends and tell them how great things the Lord has done for you and has had compassion on you. He didn't argue with him. He departed and began to publish, proclaim in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. Decapolis covered a wide area. It was 10 towns in northeast Palestine, east of the Jordan River. And the Roman Empire considered them 10 free Greek cities. If you study history, Damascus is the only one that's left of those 10 cities, and look what a mess it's in now. But this man went through a whole swath of cities and populations proclaiming what had happened to him that looked impossible before, until Christ came and performed this miracle of casting legion out of him.
And of course, this man was famous over a wide area. And so when he went into one of these cities that were known as the 10 towns or cities, the Decapolis, and said how great things Jesus had done for him and so on, it was really quite a witness. And that's what Christ wanted him to do. And look at the results. It says here, verse 20, all men did marvel. He was really serving God by doing this. And when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, or crossed over, much people gathered unto him, and he was near unto the sea. And behold, there comes one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet. And he's back over again in that part of the area where the synagogue was, along the Sea of Galilee, probably Capernaum. And he besought him greatly, begged him earnestly, my little daughter lies at the point of death. I pray you come and lay your hands on her that she may be healed and she shall live. And you see, that's what we do in God's church today as God's ministers. We anoint people, we lay hands on them, we ask God to heal them, and he will. And that's what he was doing here, and that's where we get that. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. And a certain woman which had an issue of blood, 12 years, a flow of blood, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. She had this terrible affliction, terrible. And nothing worked in terms of taking care of the problem, nothing. 12 years. And she thought, if I can only get there, get to him, get where he is, and ask him to heal me. When she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind him and touched his garment, the crowd, she finally was able to reach and touch his clothes. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And that's the kind of faith she had. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague, completely healed of that affliction. What a tremendous blessing, because she got close enough to touch him and had such faith in him that she was healed. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue or power had gone out of him, turned him about in the press, in the crowd, and said, who touched my clothes? He felt when the woman touched him and the power went from him to her to heal her, he felt that surge. And for their sake, he was doing some of these things as well. And so he said, well, who was it that did that? Where is she? He wanted to see what she would do. Who touched my clothes? I mean, he could have known that, but he wanted to do it this way. And his disciples said unto him, you see the multitude thronging you, and you say, who touched me? How are we going to be able to possibly figure that out? And he looked around about to see her that had done this thing. He knew who it was, but he wanted her to do something or say something. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth, came right up there and worshiped him. And he said unto her, daughter, your faith has made you whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. Be healed of this affliction. And she was, and never came back again. What an example. Now, if you were there and you saw this, and it was unmistakable, don't you think that would have such an impact on you that that would carry you through any time that you might have doubts? Well, the answer is yes, if you're converted. But if you're not converted, it kind of wears off. And first thing you know, other doubts come in. Look at the Israelites and all the miracles they saw, and it carried them for a while. Then it wore off, and then they started having doubts again. For miracles to really have the impact that you would think they would have, it requires faith and conversion for it to just last in terms of the strength and impact that it should have. The human mind begins to forget that and reason around it. I remember one family in one of the congregations that I pastored, they had more healings almost than any other family I'd ever seen. But they ended up getting weaker and weaker and finally left the church, even after seeing all those tremendous miracles that God performed in their family of healing. Unmistakable. It takes more than just miracles. It takes conversion. It takes faith. It takes obedience to God. Then that lasting impact will be there. While he yet spoke, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, Your daughter is dead. Why trouble you the master any more? Why are you bothering him with asking him to heal your daughter or to do something for your daughter? She's dead. As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said unto the ruler of the synagogue, Be not afraid, only believe. He got word from someone in his house that his daughter had died. Why are you here troubling him? Your daughter's dead. You ought to come on back there. Nothing else can be done. As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said unto the ruler of the synagogue, Don't be afraid. Just believe. Have faith. Look to me. Trust me. And he suffered no man or allowed no man to follow him save Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And he comes to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and seeing the tumult and them that wept and wailed greatly. Just a hopeless scene there. And when he was come in, he said unto them, Why make you this ado, this commotion, and weep? The damsel, the child, is not dead, but sleeps. Now she was dead, and there's no doubt of that. But he described death as he sees it. In other words, yes, you're dead, but in a sense, you're sleeping and waiting for the resurrection. And that was the case here. It's not that she is dead, now let's go bury her. She's dead, but it's like she's sleeping because I'm going to go in and heal her. That's why he said it the way he did. And they laughed him to scorn. You don't think she's dead? You think she's just sleeping? Oh, boy. That's absurd. But it wasn't. They laughed him to scorn, but when he had put them all out, he took the father and the mother of the damsel and them that were with him and entered in where the damsel was lying. Damsel meaning little girl. And he took the damsel by the hand and said unto her, Talitha kumma, which is being interpreted, damsel, little girl, I say unto you, arise. He just reached there and she was lying on the bed, dead, asleep in the sense of she was about to be healed and not permanently dead and about to be put in a grave, reached and got her hand and said, Young lady, I say unto you, arise. And straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years, and they were astonished with a great astonishment. Now think about who saw this. Her father went in, her mother went in, those in his close circle that were with him went in. Peter was there, verse 37. James was there, and John was there. Over and over again, they saw things like this. And over again, that layer of faith was being built, of being convinced, of being convicted. This is the Son of God. We are his apostles. He did do these things, and he'll help us do them as well. And that explains then, as you keep reading through the Bible, how those apostles became so strong and did so much and suffered such tremendous pain from time to time, but kept on going all the way to the end because of all the things that they saw from him and heard from him. And then they grew spiritually after being converted, and they looked to him for everything, and he gave them the strength. And so they went right on and did the work regardless of whatever adversity they were faced with. Look at this miracle. And straightway the young lady arose and walked, for she was of the age of 12 years, and they were astonished with a great astonishment. And he charged, commanded them strictly, that no man should know it, and commanded that something should be given her to eat. I don't want this to go anywhere. The time is not right yet. What we need to do now is she needs something to eat. She's healed. What a wonderful thing to rejoice about. But let's set her down here and give her something to eat. Give her some nourishment. Take care of her. Feed her. She's kind of weak, and this will strengthen her. There he is, always thinking about and caring for others. And that took care of that beautiful little girl from the house of the ruler of the synagogue. So just miracle after miracle, intervention after intervention, healing after healing, mercy, mercy, mercy poured out on so many people. Remember, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And that's what he'll do for us and is doing for us in his church and work today. How much more important is all of this than what the world gets so excited about? No comparison. Thankfully, God has delivered us from all of that so that we can be a part of all of this. And let's stay close to him so that he can use us in whatever way he sees fit in the coming time between now and when he comes back to this earth. Okay, that brings us to chapter 6. We'll stop there and pick it up next time.
This is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.